Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. It's the Route 51 Year-End Review Show for the year 2015, an annual holiday tradition at Wisconsin Public Radio since 2005, bringing you a year of fascinating people, interesting places, provocative politics, inspiring feature stories, and live musical performances from Randy Sabine, Howard Guitar Lookey, Jerry Schmidt, Sean Hopper, the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, Landau Eugene Murphy Jr., and the former lead singers of The Drifters, The Platters, and The Temptations, and North Central Wisconsin favorites, the Sid Kyler Jazz Band. Recorded live in our Wausau studios, Dwayne Askew, John Greiner, Louis Pratt, Dan Larson, and yours truly, Wisconsin Public Radio has sponsored the Sid Kyler River Valley Jazz Festival since its start, and although Sid is no longer with us, the tradition lives on. Wisconsin Public Radio also sponsored a virtuoso acoustic guitarist by the name of Sean Hopper, who held workshops at schools around central Wisconsin, performed at the Grand Theater, and on Route 51. Here he is demonstrating how just with his fingers and an acoustic guitar, he can play all the parts of an entire orchestra.
Walk a bass line this time. Instead of doing like a boom chick like this, you're going to walk it like this. Like it's taking you somewhere. And we're going to keep that going. And in just a second, I'm going to bring in the horn section that Stevie has. But I'm going to keep the bass going simultaneously. Here we go. One, two, three. There's our horns. Okay, here comes the backbeat. And here comes the fourth part, the melody.
Guitar virtuoso Sean Hopper. Wisconsin Public Radio also continued our sponsorship of inspirational programs from the Walk in Their Shoes program, headed by Colin Hansen of the Edgar School District, including two surviving members of the Ghost Army of World War II, Gazo Nemeth and John Jarvie, who helped defeat the Nazis with fake radio broadcasts and inflatable rubber tanks on the front lines in Europe.
Well, I was told that it was about 75% or 80% of the deception was by radio, because the Germans, obviously, all they could do is hear it. They couldn't see it, you know. And it worked to perfection as far as I know, because they never wised up to it.
We had tanks.
Phony inflatable tanks with the air compressor. Did you ever feel vulnerable? I mean, going out there in the middle of the night and then firing up a loud air compressor by yourself to try to blow up an inflatable tank?
The answer is yes, but we got used to it, and I think we got some kind of a thrill out of it.
If you didn't inflate that tank, I read that the gun barrel would sag.
Absolutely. And there's no more depressing picture than a rubber tank with the gun barrel sagging.
Earlier in the year, A Walk in Their Shoes brought to Central Wisconsin and our Route 51 studios Carlotta Walls Lanier, who changed history at the age of 14 by integrating Little Rock High School and braving the wrath of racist mobs.
We just got a report here on this end that the students are in. They're trying to keep down that way, down there. You can see from here some of the action occurring down there.
An extreme situation has been created in Little Rock. This challenge must be met, and with such measures as will preserve to the people as a whole their lawfully protected rights.
I was 14 and really didn't realize how dangerous it was to begin with, because I guess I was pretty naive about that. I wish that they looked at me as another human being as I looked at them, but they didn't, okay? At least that group that was harassing us.
Were you ever afraid?
Yeah, I was afraid, especially on September 23rd. That was probably my worst day.
That was the day they had to rush you out of the school in police cars.
Yeah, so, and not knowing why. See, that was my problem. When I can see what's going on and know what's going on, that probably would have helped me. But I did not know why we were being rushed out, and I didn't know whether it was a bomb threat or people had gotten in and had guns. Or I didn't know what the reason was until I got home.
Looking back on President Eisenhower's decision to send in the 101st Airborne, mm-hmm. what do you think of the leadership he showed in doing that, and why do you think he did it?
Let me just put it this way. Melba Beals feels that he was her hero because he did send in the 101st Airborne. I felt, what took you so long? But I was appreciative that he had done that. But here was 3 weeks. I felt like I could compete with anyone given the same opportunities, and they are in school and I'm not. So here you got a governor that's defying you and the Constitution and the law. You, as the president, I felt, should put that man in place.
Carlotta Walls Lanier, who became an icon of the civil rights movement at the age of 14 and who came to Central Wisconsin through the Walk in Their Shoes school history program. Gary Besaw, the chairman of the Menominee Tribe of Northern Wisconsin, walked all the way to Madison in the bitter cold to meet with Governor Walker over his refusal to allow a casino project. And he shared his frustrations on Route 51.
Had the governor met with me to look me in the eyes and say, Chairman Besaw, I'm sorry, I'm still going to say no. But to not even give that respect of government-to-government communication or to talk to someone's face, I have to make tough decisions sometimes. And out of respect, I would rather talk directly to that individual, you know, as a man.
Gary Besaw of the Menominee Tribe. Lakota Ray Tribal Leader Paul DeMaine, CEO of Indian Communications, told Route 51 that he supported Besaw's efforts to grow industrial hemp on the Menominee Reservation, and he said Wisconsin's tribes need to be treated with respect by the state's political leaders.
They are the owners of 50% of the public resources in northern Wisconsin. We have to say that again and again and again. When the treaties were made with the United States government, the Ojibwe people in northern Wisconsin reserved for themselves those property rights that has been theirs eternally into the future for the benefit of their children and relatives.
Paul DeMaine of Indian Country Communications. There are opponents of the Menominee Tribe's efforts to grow industrial hemp and of their vote to legalize marijuana on their reservation, including 7th District Republican Congressman Sean Duffy.
If you allow recreational marijuana, you're going in the wrong direction. This is crazy stuff, Glenn. Let's enforce all the laws, and if we don't like them, let's change them. But to legalize marijuana on the reservation in a place where they need more jobs, bad idea.
The Menominee Nation was raided by federal agents several weeks ago over what the agents said was marijuana and what the tribe insists was industrial hemp. Sean Duffy later appeared on Route 51 with his wife, political pundit Rachel Campos Duffy, to discuss the popularity of Donald Trump and the effect of his candidacy on the Republican Party.
Listen, first of all,
he's a reality star, Glenn. Come on. I mean, at some point, let's be clear. This is a, you know, he is somebody who is very bombastic, and that's how he wants to get attention. But that he represents the party, I mean,
he's been a Democrat most of his life.
I think you guys should own him.
I do think what
you guys.
Right. Oh, we know where your heart is.
Au contraire.
Newsflash, Glenn's a conservative.
But look, this guy, was, I mean, he's somebody who was for, not very long ago, partial birth abortion. He was somebody who was for...
The stimulus bill.
The stimulus bill, Obamacare.
Not even Obamacare, single payer. These are all issues that your callers, and Brad is one who would applaud. These are liberal issues that Donald Trump has supported through the course of, not his young life, but, I mean,
these
very recent history.
Recent.
7th District Congressman Sean Duffy and his wife Rachel Campos Duffy, they have endorsed Marco Rubio. Wisconsin state politics was in the news when Wausau native Ann Walsh Bradley turned back a conservative challenger to win re-election to an ideologically divided Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Are we going to have a court in this state with balance where there is room for diversity of opinion? Or are we going to have a court that only speaks with one voice, forward on Wisconsin?
People don't want out-of-state special interest money. The people of Wisconsin deserve better, and I'm going to place my trust in the voters of this state.
Ann Walsh Bradley, who won re-election to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Last year, 29th District State Senator Republican Jerry Petruski easily won re-election, and this spring he broke with his own party to oppose right-to-work legislation. You heard it first right here on Route 51.
I probably am not going to be supportive. If you're looking at bringing businesses to the state of Wisconsin, they want stability. They don't want labor unrest. Nobody has come to me from local businesses here and say, well, Jerry, we need right to work. We need Wisconsin to be a right to work state. I haven't gotten those calls.
Republican State Senator Jerry Petruski, right to work wasn't the only hot issue facing the state legislature this year. The proposal to eliminate more than a dozen research scientists from the Department of Natural Resources was supported by Republican State Senator Tom Tiffany and opposed by former DNR Secretary George Meyer.
Scientists come up with objective information. They said there was the potential, if not done right, that the Pinocchio mine could cause pollution. That isn't a major revelation. These researchers are working with UW researchers to do adaptive management, to react to what is happening on the land because of warming temperatures. What is wrong is for policymakers saying, I don't want that information at all. I'm going to cut half the scientists. That leads to ill-informed decisions by policymakers.
We're not moving in the right direction, and that's part of the reason why we need to get these people integrated within the agency to work on things that are applied science rather than things that are more theoretical that they have been working on. You know, there's 700 scientists within the Department of Natural Resources. Lobbyist Meyer has, you know, made the point that, you know, this is going to end, in effect, end science research within the Department of Natural Resources, you know, really very pejorative language. And that's not the case at all.
Senator Tom Tiffany and George Meyer of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation on Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg, and you are listening to the 2015 Year-End Review Show. A local political and environmental fight involves the efforts of the Waisaki family of farms to open Golden Sands Dairy, a concentrated animal feeding operation in Wood County. On Route 51, you heard from both sides, John Holyvoat of the Wisconsin Dairy Business Association and Wood County board member Bill Lightenham of the citizens group Protect Wood County and its neighbors.
I intuitively, instinctively knew that this would be a real challenge to our water. You know in a case like this that your community is going to be challenged. So it was a no-brainer for me. It was an easy thing to do to oppose the Golden Sands Dairy.
As a lifelong resident, are you opposed to any change in the region? Isn't development a good thing?
Yeah, certainly it is. And, you know, once you rather have 475 jobs in a golf course as opposed to 25 in something that's going to do ecological damage to your area.
The unfortunate thing is it is a struggle now for farmers like the Waisakis to build a new farm on a greenfield site. And it's increasingly becoming difficult, whether that's a potato and vegetable farm, a dairy farm, a hog farm, any type of large agricultural development is really difficult now to build in Wisconsin. And frankly, that's a sad fact. It's not a good thing at all.
John Holyvoat of the Wisconsin Dairy Business Association and Bill Lightnum of Protect Wood County and its neighbors. We featured both sides of another environmental dispute on Route 51. James Botsford, a Wausau man, is the only person standing in the way of an oil pipeline because of his refusal to grant an easement on his land in North Dakota. We heard from him and also from Lorraine Little, the senior manager of Enbridge Energy, which is suing him.
You know, it's important for people to understand that our pipeline system provides the crude oil to the local refineries, whether it's Minnesota or Wisconsin or Illinois, that ultimately turns into a gallon of gas that goes into their vehicle that gets them to work or to school or home every day.
We are under the onus of big oil to keep going with the status quo, to suck the last drops of fossil fuel out of the earth. And we need to smarten up or we're going to be in too deep a hole to leave a healthy world for the next generations. We didn't want that bad karma. We did not want to be participating in that.
Is this a David and Goliath story?
Actually, it's Goliath v. David because they sued us.
James Botsford of Wausau being sued by Enbridge Energy for blocking an oil pipeline project in North Dakota. Environmental activism met the world of art this fall, as it does every year at the Woodson Art Museum. We talked to avian artists Guy Koliak, Andrea Rich, and Karen Bondarchik in this piece that was produced by Mackenzie Martin.
You know, Wausau, the Woodson Museum, it's an amazing museum. It's a beautiful museum. Wausau is a beautiful town.
It's one of the pinnacles of bird art in the world. It really captures the breadth of avian art. They're really looking at bird art from every aspect.
One reason they have it is they treat the artists with respect. No art show in the country has ever treated artists the way these people do.
It draws people from all over the world. They do something here that you really don't see anywhere else. The museum gathers all the artists together. We spend a weekend together. It's like a family reunion almost every year. It's a real highlight of my year.
There isn't an artist alive that doesn't die to get into this show.
What do you find inspiring? What inspires you to paint?
When you grew up in the concrete jungles of New York, and you get down to the barrier beaches of Long Island, or you get into the woods in the West, it's going into the local woods that made me want to go to the Rockies and to Alaska and to Africa. It's like a cathedral. It really is.
I was always interested in wildlife. I thought I would be doing more mammals, but as time goes on, you know, once you've done a buffalo, you know, it's a big square block kind of every way you look at it, whereas the birds are very colorful and they're always, every posture is different, and every time you look at them, they're in a different pose. You can move them around the composition. So they've really grown on me over the years.
It was John Marsliff who talked about this idea of coevolution that happens with these birds and us. And I see their behavior as being really close to our behavior. They're intelligent, they're annoying, they're gregarious, they have all of the qualities that humans have in a slightly different package. So,
tell me about the piece that's on exhibit today.
Well, it's a raven, and it's called Tempest, and it's a large, kind of moody charcoal, mainly inspired by the horrific winters we've been having in Michigan.
My piece in this exhibition is a long-eared owl. And there's a couple of fledglings in a tree, and I saw them at the Mercy Hot Springs out in California.
Curiously enough, that's a barrier beach on Long Island, and I used to go down there birding and walking in the wintertime. You're down there all by yourself, and you see the ocean and the birds.
You see a connection between your artwork and environmental preservation.
Absolutely. I mean, if we keep spreading out and exchanging rivers and forests for concrete and glass, the animals in the rivers and forests aren't going to live in concrete and glass. So that what's happening is the population is encroaching more and more, both in Africa and right here in the States.
And crows and ravens are really interesting because they are scavengers, they're opportunistic, and so they're able to adapt to pretty much anything that's going on. And I see us doing pretty much the same right now with, you know, climate change going on. Humans are, you know, we're scrambling, trying to adapt to what's going on around us.
So if you like wildlife, if you like the outdoors, if you like nature, it's imperative that we try to preserve it.
That's a song, Yellow Bird, performed by Chet Atkins. Some of the artists at this year's Birds and Art exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum, which also featured a very popular and unique exhibit this past spring called The Art of the Guitar. Woodson contributor, singer-songwriter, and Stevens Point luthier John Currier joined me on Route 51 on an old cowboy song.
Silvery moon sailing high across the wide prairie sky, lead me home to the arms of my love. Why did I ever go chasing cattle and rainbows far away from the arms of my love? Does she wait by the firelight, ride through the long night? Does she dream of the cowboy who rode through her heart? Dusty trails lead me on, and I'll never roam, never more from the arms of my love.
I'm Glenn Moberg. There's more to come on the Route 51 Year-End Review Show, including feature stories on UW Stevens Point's public-private partnerships and music from Jerry Schmidt, Howard Guitar Lutke, Randy Sabine, the former lead singers of the Temptations, Platters and Drifters, and the South Beach Chamber Ensemble.
Does she wait by the firelight, ride through the long night? Does she dream of the cowboy who rode through her heart? Dusty trails lead me on, and I'll never roam, never more from the arms of my love.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like Madison Gas and Electric, Al Johnson Swedish Restaurant, and Rittenhouse play a huge role in the success of WPR. For more information, go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
From Stratford, Wisconsin, number one country roots recording artist Jerry Schmidt.
Now my friends and my family, they all tell me somehow I've been living all wrong. They tell me my drinking's gonna kill me, and the devil will soon have my soul. Yes, the devil will soon have my soul. And yesterday I wasted away, and I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but now that I find you're out of my mind, I can make it to the end of the day. Yesterday I wasted away, and I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but now that I find you're out of my mind, I can make it to the end of the day. No, I don't hurt as much as I used to.
Yeah. Hey, Jerry Schmidt. Stratford, Wisconsin's very own Jerry Schmidt, performing his number one song on the country roots chart, I Don't Hurt As Much As I Used To, on the Route 51 2015 year-end review show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and thanks, Jerry, for letting me sit in. Massive budget cuts faced the UW system this past legislative session, and no institution was hit harder than UW-Stevens Point, whose innovative public-private partnerships and so-called segregated programs were threatened with elimination. Here are two stories we put together which focus on the school's paper-making program and on its northern aquaculture demonstration facility. UW-Stevens Point will lose $1.4 million for the segregated programs, which are budget items that are funded by fees instead of general tax revenue. Add to that $8.2 million in other cuts, and the school is being hit harder than any other campus, according to Chancellor Bernie Patterson.
Our cut to our state support is 25%, the highest of any of the universities in the system. We will have fewer people working here, maybe as many as 115 positions.
The segregated program cuts include entrepreneurial partnerships like the aquaculture demonstration facility in Bayfield. Patterson says the research being done there could help feed a hungry world.
Fish farming, if you will, new breeds of fish that will grow to market size more quickly, is going to have a huge impact in not only feeding people in Wisconsin, in this country, but worldwide.
Other segregated program cuts affect the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology, run by the university's College of Natural Resources.
We have the largest student-run paper-making machine in the country. The cut includes eliminating the operator of that machine, the one who trains the students.
Paper machine lab specialist Lindsay Hoffman fires up the pilot-sized machine, which fills an entire room, rolling out high-quality commercial paper and giving students real-life experience.
We bring in contract work from all over the world. Paper testing, biofuels, chemical analysis. The paper science program boasts 100% job placement within the first 6 months after graduation.
And that's the irony, according to College of Natural Resources Dean Christine Thomas. Why cut programs that are so good at placing students in jobs?
Every student that graduates from the program is employed, and mostly they go out in their first job and make more money than their professors.
It's grand opening day at the Aquaponics Innovation Center at Nelson and Pade. UW-Stevens Point Chancellor Bernie Patterson says the public-private partnership could help feed a hungry world.
The freedom of man, I contend, is the freedom to eat, said Eleanor Roosevelt. It would be hard to overstate the importance of the work that's going on in this facility in this state.
Co-owners Rebecca Nelson and John Pade look out at the 13,500-square-foot greenhouse that combines hydroponic gardening with aquaculture fish farming, growing crops with no chemical fertilizers and a fraction of the water.
There's six different fish tanks. There's numerous filter tanks that break down the fish waste so that just nutrient-rich water goes out to the plants. The plants, as they take out the nutrients, are helping to clean the water for the fish, and that water then comes right back into the fish tank, recirculating 24 hours a day.
We can put together a system that can feed an entire village, both a protein crop and a vegetable crop.
Greens and beans and peas and things like that. We're providing the complete nutritional package that would be the ideal diet.
Nelson and Pate are raising tilapia, but that ideal diet could soon include walleye, according to Chris Hartlib, director of both the Aquaponics Innovation Center and UWSP's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility in Bayfield.
They refer to it as a white tablecloth fish because it's served at some of their fancier restaurants. Right now, walleye that you get at restaurants or supermarkets here is all imported from Canada, and there is no commercial production in the U.S.
Hartlib's goal is to create the first commercially viable walleye farming operation in the world, through research in Montello with a hybrid walleye his scientists created in Bayfield.
It's just a mating of two natural Wisconsin fish, the walleye and the sauger, but it shows accelerated growth, and we've been able to get it from egg to market to table in 9 months.
That's less than half the time it takes for walleye to mature in the wild.
Oh, is this ever good?
The hybrid walleye is on the lunch menu today, along with salmon raised in Bayfield and tilapia raised in Montello.
Ceviche, it's tilapia, but it's marinated in lime sauce.
The salads and coleslaw are all grown in the greenhouse. Nelson says they have local customers.
The fish and the lettuce, everything we grow in this greenhouse is sold within about a 20-mile radius. The Montello schools, Marquette County Services, restaurants, and grocery stores.
Nelson and Pate is also selling its technology to private companies in Wisconsin, Canada, and Texas. But the celebration in Montello is bittersweet, according to Chris Hartlib, because the facility in Bayfield is threatened by Governor Walker's budget cuts.
Our funding right now is slated to be eliminated. And if that happens, unfortunately, the facility will have to close.
But Bayfield's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility has supporters in the legislature, including State Senator Janet Bewley.
That center is producing amazing results. To tell the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, to close it is not only inappropriate, it is anti-business.
And the governor's representative at the event, Tricia Braun of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, had some encouraging words.
Elevate Wisconsin's economy. We rely on our partners in both industry and academia to help realize this vision. And Nelson and Pade and UW-Stevens Point are great examples of this.
John Pade says he's optimistic.
I don't believe when there is a need for something that it will be eliminated.
The legislature and Governor Walker will have the final say on that. In Montello, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. UWSP, like all UW schools, was still hit hard by the state budget cuts, but the segregated programs, including the Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility and the paper machine, were saved. Another unique public-private partnership at UWSP involves the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology and Okray Family Farms in an effort to grow grapes, not for juice, jam, or wine, but for medicinal purposes. Here's our story titled, you spell it P-H-A-R-M.
The best kind of fat, of course, is to get pork belly. That's
if you've ever watched The French Chef with Julia Child, you're probably aware of something called the French paradox. How do the French stay healthy with all the fatty food they eat?
Collect what fat you can.
It's a question that intrigues Paul Fowler, the head of the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology at UW-Stevens Point.
The French paradox, which is the French eat a high-fat diet, but their risk or the occurrence of heart disease is relatively low. So that was attributed to red wine.
When you pour a glass of red wine, you may think that the health benefits come from the fermented grapes. But Paul Fowler says the benefits actually come from an antioxidant that's in the grapes.
Grapes are rich in a particular compound called resveratrol.
Resveratrol is marketed in pills and capsules as a health supplement, with alleged benefits that include lowering the level of so-called bad cholesterol.
Cardiovascular benefits, protection against neurodegenerative diseases, and also minimizing aging.
So Paul Fowler and UW-Stevens Point are growing grapevines with the help of Dick Okray, one of the leading vegetable growers in central Wisconsin.
We do believe that this is going to result in pharmacological product for extending life.
They need sunshine, they need water, and they need good soil.
Okray and his assistant Gabrielle Eck rake around a few of the 1,500 vines on the experimental plot beside Highway 54 near Plover.
It's neat to see the public's reaction to it since it is right here on the highway.
So what we're growing is cold-tolerant varieties of grapes that can survive the harsh Wisconsin climate.
They've been bred to live in our climate here in the north.
Fowler says the harsh climate is important for the experiment because the levels of resveratrol go up when the plants experience the stress of cold weather.
We're striking a balance, really. A grape which can tolerate the cold to a certain extent, but also responds to that cold weather. So the idea is that by planting them in a cold climate, a harsh climate, the production of resveratrol will be naturally enhanced.
What does the Food and Drug Administration have to say about resveratrol?
It doesn't have anything to say about supplements right now.
How do you know that it's actually doing what it's supposed to do if the federal government hasn't weighed in?
There are a lot of preclinical trials and literature which point to beneficial effects.
Dick Okray knows the business of agriculture, and he says he can see the opportunities.
You have to be able to make money at a project in order for it to remain sustainable.
And he jokes that he has found a whole new way to spell farm.
In this case, we're going to spell it P-H-A-R-M.
As in pharmacy. Glenn Mobert, Wisconsin Public Radio News. And you are listening to the 2015 Year-End Review Show on Route 51. In our final segment, you'll hear about a local man who relived the childhood storybook, Paddle to the Sea. And you'll hear live in-studio music from Randy Sabine, Howard Guitar Lutke, and the South Beach Chamber Ensemble. But first, here's a segment from one of my favorite shows of the past year, which featured four musicians who appeared at Century Theater in Stevens Point. Landau Eugene Murphy Jr. and Glenn Leonard, Joe Coleman, and Joe Blunt, formerly of the Temptations, the Platters, and the Drifters.
Well, first of all, let me say this. You're not going to get Memorex this morning.
First, it's a cappella and it's early. Singers don't sing. First tenors don't sing this early. So we got to wake the vocal cords up. It was just my imagination running away with me. It was just my imagination running away with me. How about that?
Can I do the other part?
Go,
every night on my knees I pray.
Can we hear my girl?
I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. Yes, I do. Well, I guess you'd say, what can make me feel this way? My girl,
my girl,
my girl, talking about my little girl, yeah,
my girl.
Okay, that's all.
Little bass line.
Thank you to the businesses who help support WPR programs, including Alvarado Real Estate Group, Festival Choir of Madison, and Northern Sky Theater. Play a role in the success of WPR. Become a business sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
Whoa, I'm in the mood for love. Yes, I am. I'm in the mood, I'm in the mood. Child, I'm in the mood for love. I'll pay for me, Glenn.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We are into the final segment of the 2015 year-end review show on Route 51. It was my distinct pleasure this past year to be able to sit in with two great professional artists, jazz violinist Randy Sabine and bluesman Howard Guitar Lutke, who jammed with me live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios.
You know the night time, the right time, be here with the one you love. But when the night time comes, baby, you so far away, leave me here in the mood.
I'm in the mood.
Yes, sir.
I'm in the mood.
I'm in the mood for love. I'm in the mood, I'm in the mood, I'm in the mood, I'm in the mood.
I'm in the mood for love.
I traveled across this country, I traveled to the furthest land. I ain't found no one to tell me yet what is the soul of a man. Well, I want somebody to tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me. Brother, what is the soul of a man? Tell me, Glenn. Just in time to hear the doctor and the lawyer say a man ain't
nothing but his mind.
Well, I want somebody to tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me. Brother, what is the soul of a man?
Randy Sabine and Howard Guitar Lutke in live performances this past year on Route 51. One of our more interesting guests was a former Portage County sheriff turned author, Dan Hintz, whose new book, In Pursuit of Justice, Memoirs of a Small Town Sheriff, details his key role in shutting down the white supremacist paramilitary terrorist group, the Posse Comitatus, in Tigerton, Wisconsin.
He posted squad cars with shotguns with buckshot near the entrance. We agreed on a 45-minute span of time during which I'm to deal with the posse and negotiate. And if I was not out at the end of 45 minutes, they would come in and get me, now, knowing that I'm in trouble.
And once again, Manischewski brandished that 45. He said, quote, "You will walk knee-deep in blood." And another posse member warned you that the people in the compound were fully trained warriors. How did you respond to that?
Well, basically, what they're telling me or asking me is whether or not I felt that I had the firepower to take on a situation like this. And, you know, my response was, move you will. You know, you're going to be removed. You know, I would love to avoid a confrontation, bloodshed. You got women and children in this compound with you. You know, you're putting them in danger.
That's former Portage County Sheriff Dan Hintz, author of In Pursuit of Justice, Memoirs of a Small Town Sheriff. The city of Wausau is in pursuit of a solution to its struggling Wausau Center Mall. In a newsmaking moment on Route 51, mall owner CBL's chief financial officer, Farzana Mitchell, predicted that without assistance, the mall would die and become, in her words, a big hole in the ground. Wausau Mayor Jim Tipple reacted live on the air.
Just the end of Wausau Center. Sorry to say, but that's what's going to happen, and that should not happen. If the city of Wausau does not take this seriously and take it in their own hands, then you will have a big hole in your ground.
I would not agree to the big hole in the ground. There'll still be a building there that would have to be repurposed. But, you know, I think she's indicating the gravity of the situation, and we need to pay attention to that.
Wausau Mayor Jim Tipple and Farzana Mitchell, CFO of mall owner CBL. The city of Wausau considered trying to annex the troubled village of Brokaw this past year. After that was one of the options in a study commissioned in part by the Marathon County Board. Here's Administrator Brad Karger.
You do not have time to ponder this. The time for action is yesterday. It's going to be very important that four communities who have limited experience cooperating really go from limited experience to the master's degree level fast.
Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger. In the end, Wausau did not annex Brokaw, but the township to the north, the town of Maine, may do that instead, following a successful vote to incorporate and become a village. Town of Maine Chair Betty Hainish was pleased at a lopsided vote in favor of the referendum by the town's citizens.
To have such overwhelming support, we cannot thank our electors enough. It just, I guess as a town official, when you're faced with something of this magnitude, you want to know that you have your electors behind you. This is uncharted territory, Glenn, and to say that we aren't a little bit apprehensive, we would be not, I would not feel that I was being truthful.
The new village of Maine's Betty Hainish is not out of the woods yet. The city of Wausau is considering legal action because of their vote to incorporate. The city rejected a proposal this past year to do away with its strong mayor form of government in favor of a full-time city administrator. Route 51 featured a debate between former Wausau Mayor Linda Lawrence and Wausau Alderman Keen Winters.
And I have a board of public works that has my chief attorney, my chief financial officer, my chief CPA, and my chief engineer on it, and all of them look at each other and say, well, it wasn't my department that screwed up. And so where am I? I need someone where the buck stops and someone who has the ability to coach, mentor, and lead other people who have master's degrees. And we're just not going to find that running around the streets of Wausau.
A mayor's role to me is almost like a conductor of an orchestra, that you have staff ready to implement policy and what the legislative body has deemed. You need to be networking with the people who are voting and the people who live and have businesses there. And I just cannot envision a part-time mayor being able to do all that.
Former Wausau Mayor Linda Lawrence, Keen Winters has announced that he is now running for mayor after the referendum he championed was defeated. Finally, on the Route 51 Year-End Review Show, we have saved the best for last. My favorite feature story of the year, about a central Wisconsin man who found a weather-worn miniature boat on a Lake Superior beach and relived the childhood story, Paddle to the Sea.
The boy came running over the slippery ground. He was just in time to see the canoe slide down into the rushing water.
Jeffrey Hinneber always liked Paddle to the Sea, about an Indian boy who releases a miniature hand-carved canoe on Lake Nipigon with dreams that it would travel across Lake Superior to the Atlantic Ocean.
Ho, he called. You've started on your journey. Goodbye, Paddle to the Sea. It's a wonderful book, wonderful maps of the Great Lakes and mapping of the route where the wind and waves may have pushed this little boat.
Hinneber says he can't get enough of the wind and the waves and the beaches of the big lake. It was last July that he made his discovery.
We were on York Island. It's a big crescent beach on the north side of that island. And a good 10 yards up the beach where storms had thrown a bunch of driftwood, I saw something that had more of a symmetric shape.
It was a 10-inch long, hand-carved wooden boat with a weathered inscription on the bottom.
I could clearly make out that it said Lenny, and then there was a last name that was obscured. It had a P.O. box, but the numbers were not legible. And then finally, it said Cornucopia, Wisconsin.
In the book, a sea captain finds the little canoe, fixes it up, and sends it on its way.
So that is how Paddle got a new copper rudder that would not rust, new paint, with the canoe bright red.
Jeffrey Hinneber, who builds kayaks, did the same with his little boat.
I did paint a little red stripe around the entire boat to give it a little more pizzazz. And engraved a brass plaque that included the information about my finding it where and the release date.
Hinneber's discovery caught the eye of Ruth Opedal, executive director of the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin.
Kind of reminded me of Paddle to the Sea, and I just thought, wow, this is a great watershed story.
Opedal says with a watershed like Lake Superior, it really could happen.
It's possible. That's why it's called a watershed. Possible drop of water that falls in Lake Nipigon can make its way out to the Atlantic Ocean.
The question Ruth Opedal wants answered, who is Lenny?
Oh. Well, you know, when I saw a picture of that boat and I saw Lenny, I thought, you know, that's a traditional name. That sounds like something that was carved maybe 40, 50 years ago.
Opedal thought it might be Leonard Isaacson, who owns a 90-year-old lumber company in the South Shore community of Herbster. But Isaacson says he didn't carve it.
Well, I have carved little boats, but nothing like that. You know, what Leonards or Lennies would be here in the last 50 years or more, but I don't know any.
So for Jeffrey Hinneber, it's just another Lake Superior mystery.
The lake is phenomenal in its pristine beauty. On the eastern shore, there's pictographs, sacred places, and islands that were revered by First Nation peoples.
First Nation people who traveled the Great Lake in carved wooden boats.
Yes, little traveler, you made the journey, the long journey. You now know the things I have yet to know. You are truly a paddle person, a paddle to the sea.
Now, the boat that Jeffrey Hinneber found is back in Lake Superior on its own long journey. And there is much about this story that we have yet to know. I'm Glenn Moberg, and you are listening to the Route 51 Year-End Review Show. And as always, we leave you with a live in-studio performance by the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, recorded during their annual Up North Tour, which we have now sponsored for 8 years. Here's leader and Wausau native Michael Andrews.
Probably one of the most famous unknown tangos. People know it, but they don't know the name. It's called La Comparsita.
Michael Andrews and the South Beach Chamber Ensemble live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. South Beach Chamber Ensemble with Wausau native and ensemble leader Michael Andrews, Sarah Schreffler and UW Stevens Points, Oscar Soler on violin, and Kenneth Martinson on viola. Thanks to our other featured musicians today, Randy Sabine, Howard Guitar Lutke, Jerry Schmidt, John Currier, Sean Hopper, the Sid Kyler Jazz Band, Landau Eugene Murphy Jr., and Glenn Leonard, Joe Coleman, and Joe Blunt, formerly of the Temptations, the Platters, and the Drifters. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to the people who made it happen, our executive producers Rick Ryer and Dean Kallenbach, and our on-air producers Jane Ritger and Lori Frazier, contributor Mackenzie Martin, and thanks to John Altenberg, as always, for the Route 51 theme. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of this show, you can hear it again in its entirety tomorrow, Friday night, New Year's night, at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next year, we're heading out of town. Thank you.